sorry about that. That is
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Okay.
So what services are they asking for the most?
So for a mature client, one of our most popular services is called the Fountain of Youth, and it's a hair coloring service. But the main value of it is it's a semi-permanent color, so it's not going to give you a very harsh look. So if you go into the salon and decide to cover up your hair, going back to work the next day, everyone isn't going to look at you and be like, oh, wow, now you have jet black hair.
Okay. So I could see that you really know how to answer the questions. I don't have to. You're going to be perfect. And I'll probably ask questions like, do men care about wrinkles? Are you surprised at the success and growth of the company? You know, given that we always think that men put their looks on the back burner, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right.
Okay.
Are you ready to go? Anything you want to ask me first?
So the talking points that I had were focused on a skincare routine.
Okay.
Do we want to focus on that and then mention the Fountain of Youth service and maybe tips for, like, combating, like, thinning hair? And like you said, just other services that we could talk about.
Yeah, I'm going to go in the order. I love the starting with the Fountain of Youth service, then the skin protocol, right? And then the thinning hair protocol. How about those?
Sorry,
three?
What was the second one?
Your skin care service, skin care routine or protocol that you're suggesting.
Okay, that sounds great, yeah.
Good. Okay, I'm ready to go, so we're good. Do you pronounce it Lauren Rachel?
Yes, that's perfect.
Good, okay.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair.
Yeah, he sees hair on his head and not his shoulders. What a perfect introduction for today's hour, because Loud and Proud, we're going to be talking about grooming for men. We're going to be talking about the new change in Social Security that's going to affect everybody's life, and I'll try to demystify that for you. And we're going to be talking about a CCRC. You know what a CCRC is? It is a continuing care residential community, a very special one in the great state of Illinois, specifically in Chicago, that is breaking all the rules. And this is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, and this is the Fountain of Truth about aging. It's the only show, and we now have added some wonderful, in fact, specifically in Tennessee, a brand new affiliate. So we're up to 34 affiliates. That is wonderful. I think it is the only syndicated show that celebrates aging and gives you every single aspect of successful aging for you to apply in your own life. So today, we're going to begin with something that, you know, you might think is relegated only to the mature woman. And for sure, it's not. And to prove it, we have Lauren Rachel, who is the marketing manager for Boardroom. Boardroom is a growing company for men's services that have to do with their hair, massage, skin care, and everything else that we think of kind of as the purveyor of women's interests. But no, it is growing enormously with the mature male. So let's say hello to Lauren and jump right in about what you can do for your skin care, your hair, your thinning hair, just new information, new material that will make you guys as happy, peppy, and sexy as women, and you don't need Botox. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Hi, Adrian. I'm great. How about you?
I am fine. I'm really excited to talk about this because I am seeing a change, a strange change, in men even over 60 really paying attention to their appearance. So tell us a little bit about Boardroom first so we know where all your information is coming from.
Yeah, so you are exactly right. The men's grooming market just continues to grow, and men of all ages are starting to care more about their appearance and just preserving their good looks. So the Boardroom Salon for Men is an upscale men's salon, and we are full service, So we offer haircuts, hot lather shaves, facials, massages, hair coloring, waxing, hand and foot groomings, and more. And we currently have 20 locations throughout Texas and Tennessee. And all of our salons are very masculine. They resemble a 1920s sophisticated men's club. So we have lots of oversized leather chairs, dark wood paneling, a pool table, chessboard. It's really a great place for guys to relax and look great.
Sort of like a man cave with barbers and masseuses. So, you know, because you'd still need to get them in. Looks alone is not the only thing. The relaxation is part of it. But I will tell you that I like something I call the George Clooney look. And that is when men who have gray hair get it dyed, and they have kind of salt and pepper hair after that, like George Clooney does. You have a process like that. Tell us about what men are doing with regard to their hair coloring.
Yeah, so right along with the Fountain of Truth, we have a service which is called the Fountain of Youth.
Okay.
And so as we know, gray hair is pretty much all but inevitable for most men, but that doesn't mean that you have to live with it. So our Fountain of Youth service, it's a semi-permanent color, and it allows the color molecules to enter to the hair shaft. And it creates a permanent color, but it isn't applied to all of the hair. So it's going to apply to your choosing of how strong you want the color to apply, but it's going to give you that perfect salt and pepper look. So it's really natural, and you're not going to go back to the office the next day or go meet up with your friends and look like 20 years of graying just suddenly disappeared overnight. It takes about 10 minutes, and you can choose your natural desired color, your natural amount of gray that you want to appear, and then in the end, your hair looks a lot more youthful and healthy, and you really look great, and you're going to feel so much more confident.
You know, the next thing, of course, is for women, and I'm one of them. I really do use a protocol of creams. I do. I use some retinol, and I use some hyaluronic acid and so on, and I think it makes a difference. But men don't. They generally shave and run away. However, that's changing, too. I have a feeling that a lot of the women listening are going to be buying what you're talking about for their men as opposed to the men buying it, but I'm not so sure. I know you have a skincare protocol for men of a certain age.
Yeah, so you are exactly right. Skincare is often viewed as a women's only club, but that is definitely not the truth. Men need to make skincare a priority as well. And thorough cleaning and skin protection is essentially a universal fountain of youth. So at the Boardroom Salon for Men, we recommend a simple routine that all men can follow in 5 minutes, just twice a day, and it won't sacrifice their masculinity. So the main thing here is to focus on your products and make sure that you're using quality products. You're really going to get lasting results with natural ingredients, and instead of purchasing, you know, bar soap or products maybe from the drugstore with more chemicals and fragrances, you really want a pure quality product. So it's really important for men to establish a quick routine. And like you said, you have your routine, most women do, and it's just one of those things. You're just in your groove. You're used to it. And so it's really starting that routine as quickly as you can. So if you never establish a constant skin routine in your younger years, now is the perfect time to start. So we recommend starting with a daily cleanser, not a bar of soap, like I said, and avoid washing with hot or cold water, preferably use lukewarm water. And we carry a great line of products called Jack Black, and all of their products are made for men of all different ages, and they have specific areas, problem areas that they target and things like that. Another thing that's extremely important in your routine is moisturization and sunscreen. And so Jack Black has a great product which combines both. So it makes it really quick and easy to use. And it's called the Double Duty Face Moisturizer. And it's recommended to use this every day. It's really easy to apply, but wrinkles are most commonly caused by sun exposure. So using that SPF is really going to help and get you lasting results.
Yeah, you know, I want everyone to know this is not an advertisement. We do something very special here. We do look for companies that we think are leaders in the field of aging in some way or another, of successful aging in some way or another. And grooming for men is not an easy thing to find. So we have this group, and Boardroom has been very successful for a lot of word of mouth for older adults. One of the biggest problems with men is they don't do it. They don't do it, Lauren is saying. And, of course, they look great and they look craggy, which is wonderful. We get crow's feet. They get beautiful crags around their eyes, sexy crags. However, time does come. A time does come when you look when they begin to look a little loopy. So it's good to know that boardroom is around. Now, I don't know, because, as I say, you're not a sponsor. You're here as a guest of ours. I don't even know the answer to this question. Those products that you recommended, can you get them online, or do you have to go to Tennessee?
Yes. So these products are available online, and they're also available at all of our salon locations. So whenever you stop into the salon, our team of stylists and barbers, they're really helpful, and they really want to focus on your concerns and get you the best products that are going to work for you and your lifestyle and your skin type.
Right. And, of course, for those who aren't around near there, or they're not, a boardroom won't be coming to you because they're growing, but they're not everywhere yet, you can go online to boardroomsalon.com. Now, we have a couple of minutes. When I come back, I do want to open the door to a whole new world, and that is the world of the changing Social Security laws. And then we're going to go back to Lauren for a little while, because we're going to be talking about thinning hair. And I would say that if we took a poll, Lauren, of the major concerns that men have, it wouldn't be skincare. They'd come right up with, I'm losing my hair, and what should I do
Absolutely.
About it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we will be talking about that. Now, remember, this is Generation Bold. You can go on our website, generationboldradio.com. You can hear all the archives of our show. We did win the 2015 Gold Mature Media Award. We are here for you with issues of aging, issues of money, looks, sexuality, and, of course, one of the major things, relationships. But also, when we... in our second guest of the show, we'll be speaking about a brand new type of assisted living facility. It might be of very great interest to you if you're a family caregiver, and we do focus on the issues of family caregiving. This morning, too, we are dealing with the issues of beauty in men. So much time is spent talking about Restylanes and Perlanes and Botoxes and lasers for women. But guys over the age of 50, and now even more so over the age of 60, are paying a lot of attention to their looks. Interestingly, I was looking at brochures of Viking and other cruises, and I was looking at the pictures of the men models, and I see what's going on. What a change. Yes, they do have mostly men with gray hair or salt and pepper, but they look really wonderful. And we'll see how to make that true in your life when we come back with Lauren and Rachel right after this break.
You
don't go anywhere.
That doesn't bother me, not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, very, very good segment. You see how it goes?
Yeah, that was great.
Okay, so now what's going to happen is we're on our second and last segment in a couple of minutes. I'm going to be talking about Social Security, and then I'm going to reintroduce you. And we'll talk about thinning hair, okay?
Okay, perfect.
Good. I'm just going to wait for my cue, and then you'll hear me again. I'm ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate.
And this is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth. The fountain of truth about what? That word that dare not speak its name, and that word is aging. We cover the waterfront when it comes to issues of successful, happy, productive, legacy-building, value-driven, and contributing aging. Hey, that's a great mission statement. All right. Now, I got to talk about Social Security for a few moments. We are going to be doing a fabulous seminar in the great state of New Jersey that goes through the changes in the Social Security law. Now, because I'm heard, I think now 34 states, it's not going to do you much good because you're not going to get on a plane and fly down to Clinton, New Jersey. But what we are going to be doing is we're going to be putting on our blog at generationboldradio.com the most important articles, materials that relate to the changes in Social Security. For those of you who don't know, I want to give you a very quick synopsis before we get back to Laura and Rachel of Boardroom Salon for Men. And this is it. October 30th, 2015, there were three impacts on Social Security under the new budget law. Now, this is a bipartisan law signed by the president. It is in effect, period, the end. This is not pie in the sky. It goes like this. There was a time that you could file for Social Security. Your spouse would file for their share, which is about half of yours. You would then suspend your Social Security until age 70 and let it grow. But the spouse, husband or wife, would keep their spousal share, giving you extra money. This is very, very important. The average couple got an extra $15,000 a year out of this. It is no longer in effect. You cannot do it. But here's why this show lives. You can do it if you file and suspend on or before April 30th, 2016. So if you are doing some security planning, but you thought you were going to wait and you had all the time in the world, get to your financial advisor now or call the Social Security Administration, however you want to handle it, and decide, do you want, because you only have less than 6 months, to file and suspend, okay? Second change, there was something called a reset, which also allowed individuals to take their Social Security and then make a change and reset it until age 70, allowing it to grow. Now, that there's no grandfathering in. This is not permitted at all for people who were born after 1954. But if you were born before 1954, and many of our listeners were, you still can do this. And again, you want to speak to your financial planner, your advisor, or your Social Security office, or both, about what's called the reset. Now, those are two new changed laws. And why are they changed? Because Social Security is bankrupt. There's not a penny in the trust. And all the money has to come from the general obligations of the United States government, and we're in big debt. So while your amounts of money you get, your checks don't change, they're eating away at Social Security in a lot of different ways. Not taking it at age 65, but people have to take it at age 66, 67. So the ages are ratcheting up, and this is changing. Very important. And third, last but not least, there was going to be a hike in how much you paid for Medicare. That did not happen under the bipartisan. It got saved, but it didn't get saved for long. So watch for that to happen in the future. All right, let's get back to Laura and Rachel. Laura and Rachel is the marketing director of Boardroom, beautiful salon services for men. But there's also products here. We discussed the facial cleansing products and so on. You can find out all about this at boardroomsalon.com. But let's go back to thinning hair from Social Security, which is making our hair fall out, Lauren, to you. How can you help people whose hair is falling out because of Social Security?
So, yeah, we have a few awesome tips for that. So men often believe that the longer their hair is, the more it covers up their bald spot or receding hairline, which is absolutely not true. As we know from Donald Trump, it's not the best look.
Right.
So if your hair is naturally starting to thin, we recommend keeping your hair cropped short. Keeping the hair shorter but not too short gives it a feathered effect, which in result makes the receding hairline much less noticeable. Another great way to combat thinning hair is to increase the volume of your hair. So imagine a thick in front style and strong throughout. So to get this look, you're going to use a light gel in your hair and then blow dry while fluffing out your hair with a brush. And it's a really quick process. It's only going to take you about 5 minutes, but it's really going to increase the volume of your hair and give you a much stronger look. If you're unsure how to style your hair this way, your stylist can teach you and can also recommend awesome products that will help ease the process. And the main thing here is to really figure out the style that works best for you. And at Boardroom, we have a great team of stylists and barbers who are there to help you achieve your look and to help you provide the hairstyle that looks the best for you and works the best for you.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen this. I would say my own husband, his problem, he's got very thick hair. So thick and so black that people sometimes think he's wearing a toupee. Unless they're taller than him. Because if they're taller than him, then they know he's got male pattern baldness, which is that round circle that makes you look like Friar Tuck. That's a tough one to do a hairstyle with. Have you ever seen a successful one there? Because I know you're right. Those comb-overs are just hideous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can also be a difficult look. What we would recommend there is to try to keep moisture in the hair, which will, in result, give you a cleaner look and will take out some of the thickness. So using products with moisturizing oils or even a stronghold gel to really lock the look in place and prevent your hair from, you know, getting wind damage or kind of coming unstyled as you move throughout the day.
What about hair growth products like minoxidil and Rogaine and all that? Do they work for men where they say they do?
Well, I can't say for sure, but at Boardroom Salon, we have a very nice product line which combats thinning hair and balding, and it's called Rene Ferderer. So the difference here between this product line and other lines such as Botox or Rogaine is Rene Ferderer uses all natural ingredients, which we think really provide lasting results. So all of the ingredients are plant-based and taken, you know, from organic plants and are really helpful and really putting a lot of good vitamins back in your scalp, which
right.
really strengthens your hair follicles and prevents the hair falling out or becoming thinner.
Well, this has been a good eye-opener. I hope you guys will go do this and initiate it on your own. I know that a lot of the women listening would like to get these products for the holiday season. So it's boardroomsalon.com. So it's not just for us. Millions are spent on cosmetics and surgery by my constituents, 50-plus, every single year. And more of that dollar is coming from the men. So thank you, Lauren. Thank you for giving for your eye-openers and your tips.
Thank you so much, Adrian. And yeah, you're exactly right. With Christmas just right around,
it's been a pleasure.
But that
we'll be back.
Bother me not
we'll
even
anywhere.
A bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Can we start with Grandma? That's possible. Yeah, next one. Hi, how are you? Okay, so we're off. Lauren?
Yeah.
That was very, very good. And I think we got everything in.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I had a great time and you were extremely helpful and made it very easy.
Makes it easy. So anyway, Stuart will be sending you the date that this airs and it
okay.
gets archived and you can... he says he's sending it to Rebecca. I don't know who Rebecca is, but he said, do you know who
okay.
Rebecca is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So my appreciation to you would be if you would let people know that you did this and put it on your social media or whatever, so that tells people that the show is there.
Absolutely, yeah. We would be happy to.
So any kind of cross-promotion is always appreciated. We don't know how we grow, but we are growing. Okay?
Well, that is great, yeah. I will definitely share as often as we can.
Great. Thank you very much, and take care.
Thanks so much, Adrian. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello, this is Adrian. How
Hello,
are you?
Hello, yeah, this is Kyle. Excellent.
Hi, Kyle. Okay, so we are not on the air yet. I just wanted to talk to you for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to go on, all right?
Okay.
So I'm seeing, is the name Kyle X-Line? Is that the way you say it?
That is correct, yes.
Executive Director of the Claire. So let me tell you how the show goes and then a little bit about what I'll be asking you and we can talk about. You are the second guest, so we've already done the first guest, so you were already introduced at the beginning of the show. And I'm going to reintroduce you after you'll hear some music. I'll introduce the topic of congregate care and what a CCRC is, and then tell everybody that I said that the Claire was breaking the rules and doing something extremely innovative. So that's what they're waiting for, all right?
Okay.
And the reason that I really took up on this when you sent the press release was, I believe in what you're doing. I think that too few people actually go into congregate care, and they have not always the best environment at home. But it could look very dreary, and it could look like going into some sort of a facility, even a prison, I've heard people say. So this is the breakthrough. And my questions to you will be just what you sent, which is the five big new features that people ought to look to, like the fine dining, the active aging. And we just talk about what the Claire is doing and its breakthrough attitude, let's say. Is there anything
Excellent.
Else that you would like me to particularly focus on?
No, that sounds great. So I'm looking forward to it.
Good. And we have two segments. I think one is 11 minutes and the other one is nine minutes or so. 8 or 9 minutes. Okay?
Okay.
So if you're ready to go, I am ready to go. The Claire is in Chicago, but I don't have the website. What is the website for the Claire?
TheClaire.com.
Just TheClaire.com, C-L-A-R-E.
Yes.
Right. Now, before we go on, I do have a question, which you may or may not want to answer, so I'm going to ask it first. Money, what does this thing cost to go into such a facility?
Yeah, so this is the high-end luxury retirement community. So it's an affluent market that's looking to live at the Claire. So price, you know, I'll give you this just kind of offline, but the price per month is going to be average around $5,000 per month. But then there also is an entry fee. So there's an entry fee to move into the community, and that can range from $300,000 to, we have an apartment that's $2.2
million. They
don't own the actual apartment. They own the contract to live at the Claire. We have a one-bedroom apartment, all the way up to a five-bedroom apartment. So it's somewhat like a condominium building, so to speak. But they just don't own the actual unit.
Now, when they buy in, is it something that people can, this contract, does it end at their death, or is there any rights to heirs?
Correct. So it does. It ends when they move out, however that may be. And once they move out, they then are guaranteed a refund on the entry fee that they paid. So in most cases, we offer a 90% refund. So their heirs would get that 90% of the initial entry fee that they paid.
Now, is there a name for this? Because there's so many different configurations. There's ownership or not. Is there a specific name for this type of buy-in?
Yeah, so this is called, it's called a life care retirement community.
Good.
Yes.
So what I would like you to do, and I will ask, I won't ask you the money, but I would ask you to explain that type of way of ownership, a life care,
sure.
What that is. And you could say it's monthly, you buy in, you get 90% for the year, like that, okay?
Okay.
But we'll do that
yep.
secondarily, all right?
Great.
Good. I'm ready to go, Sue. Thirty seconds is too long.
I know, so I'm going to try to find it for the rest.
All right, will you do that?
I will count it.
Okay. I'm ready to go.
Inappropriate.
What, Mom?
Why is it so hilarious when grandmas do anything other than watch Matlock? Every Adam Sandler movie has some grandma doing something young people do, and apparently it's the funniest thing ever.
And this is Adrienne Berg, and you know, we talk about the older adults, and that's a great example in our own ditty written for us. It's a 10-minute musical called I'm Inappropriate for My Age, written by a Broadway lyricist and composer for us, except that he was 35 years old. So that's the way he thinks grandma sounds. Great. The fact is, though, that we do get older, and we do talk about housing. We've talked about co-housing and shared housing and aging in place through the years on this show. But one of the things that's very important to me is the time in someone's life when they may actually go into a retirement community, where they no longer want or should age in place. And we have so many permutations of assisted livings, what they call SNFs, skilled nursing homes, active retirement communities, that I think the public is already getting confused as to what they should expect from these different types of places. But we also have incredible innovations. I know that a lot of people listening, because half of all 60-year-olds have one living parent, at least, meaning that those parents are 80 in their early 90s. And I know that a lot of our listeners are having trouble getting an older parent to be willing to leave their homes or their apartments, go into some sort of congregate facility, because when they take them there, they look like a prison. They hate it. Or they look like a hospital. Or everybody seems to be impaired. Or they just look boring. Well, there is a very innovative company and facility in the great state of Illinois, as I explained at the beginning of the show. It's called The Claire. It's in Chicago. Yes, it is very upscale. But it often trickles down. When you have a very upscale community with a perfect kind of facility, it teaches everyone. So I'm very, very pleased to have Kyle Exline, who's the executive director of The Claire, with me today and for the remainder of the show to show you what a congregate care facility or retirement community could really be like. And you may never have seen anything like this before. So it's very, very useful and valuable in your own life, but also perhaps if you are a caregiver. So, Kyle, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, you know, The Claire really jumped out at me because I said earlier it breaks some rules. Fine dining, active aging as a goal, even beautiful environment. It's just different than what we envision when we think about assisted living. So just get behind The Claire in terms of its mission statement, how it came about that you are adding and began with these innovations, and how different it is, what people could expect if they actually could see it.
Yeah, and actually I'm glad you brought that up. So the Claire's purpose is to create a senior living lifestyle that redefines the retirement experience. And that whole idea is typically you think of a retirement experience, and just as you stated earlier, maybe an institution, or I like to think of rocking chairs outside of a building, just that typical institutional feel. And our goal and purpose is to redefine that for people. And one of our principles is to be innovative. And so we really think that to attract the next generation of retirees, we have to be innovative and press the issue to provide services that are above and beyond what people are expecting to get from their retirement. So fine dining, the dining industry as a whole is evolving very, very quickly in the retirement world. So what we're seeing is people are wanting flexible options. So they want casual dining, they want fine dining, they want special events. They want an executive chef that could be on Top Chef or one of the five-star restaurants here in the city. They want to experience a dining program that that gets them excited, that makes them want to come down to eat every night. So those are some of the things that we're taking on here at The Claire.
Yeah, and you know, I got the opportunity to see a company that's called Morrison. Maybe you even use them, but they're consultants on how a dining environment should be. And what I was very interested to see was it wasn't all congregate. It wasn't everybody eating around a round table. There were individual tables. You can sit by yourself. You can sit by couple. There was a bar. So this idea that everybody has to love each other once they're over the age of 70 and sit and eat it's no longer the case. The environment of the dining rooms and the abilities, not just the food, is changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, The Claire So we're a continuum care retirement community. So nearly 90% of our residents that live here are actually independent living residents. So they have no needs for healthcare services at this time. The idea and the concept is as individuals age, they then have the ability to move into assisted living or skilled nursing that are also here on site. So to speak to the environment, our dining room, for example, our multiple dining venues are very similar to restaurants that you would go around into the city. So we have four tops, we have six tops, we have two tops, and all high-level service that we provide. Our service, the way we look at it, is we want a very high-level, sophisticated service from our servers in the dining room, but have the personal feel of a neighborhood bar that you would go into. So we want our servers to know our residents, but at the same time really provide top-notch quality service that they could expect at any restaurant on Michigan Avenue.
So now, of course, with so many of your people independently living, they have their own kitchens, they're doing their own food, and they're in their own environments. Let's talk a little bit about universal design and how you've applied some of that to the apartments and the residences, so that people can age in place in this new place for as long as possible, and in fact, all their life.
Yeah, and so it is aging in place. So our residents move into independent living. You mentioned cooking. I would probably say only 10% of them actually cook. So majority of our residents are utilizing that dining service that we feature. But living at home and staying in that independent apartment that they're currently in is very important to our residents. And so we do offer caregiving services, so where residents could add additional hours of service in the morning or in the evening if they need it. We offer a wide range of transportation services, so our residents don't need a car. Majority of our residents don't have vehicles, so they rely on our town car to take them to doctor's appointments or to the art museum. So those type of extra features, the wellness center that we have here on site. So residents want to come down and get their blood pressure checked. They can do that here at the Claire. It's really a full-service retirement community. We have a concierge, so residents want dinner reservations at someplace else other than the Claire. They can go down and schedule that through our full-service concierge. We try to take out all the pressure that you would typically have in owning your own home or living outside of a retirement community and make it seamless here at this community.
Yeah, so another thing that I have to bring up is urbanization of retirement. We study it. We study demographics and where people are moving and how they're moving constantly. And, of course, the urban environment for retirement is getting extremely popular. I will say that as a New Yorker, New York City is a great place to retire for the same reason that Chicago is. You've got theater. You've got all the restaurants that you mentioned. You've got art and so on. So are you seeing people coming from the suburbs and then retiring? In other words, almost reverse. We think about people as they get older going from urban to suburban. Now they're going from suburban to urban.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big draw for our residents is the suburban markets where we pull people from. But typically what we see is they probably worked in the city when they were younger. They then retired, or not retired, they then moved out to the suburbs when they had children. And they've always wanted to get back into the city when they retired. And that's definitely what we see. We also see the children living here in the city. So that's a big draw is residents wanting to be closer to their family. And if they're living in the city, then that's where they also want to be.
And we have a minute or so before we have to take a little bit of a break. You know, you use the word active aging, and I love it because there is an International Council on Active Aging. I do a lot of speaking there. What do you mean by active aging at the Claire?
Yeah, exactly, and we discussed it a little bit. So maybe it's being a docent at the art museum. Maybe it's taking part of our Tai Chi classes or fitness opportunities that we have here, yoga, those type of things you normally get at a gym, doing that here at the Claire. But just to continue to stay involved. And I think being in the city really pushes you to do that. And the city brings so much energy, and there's so many opportunities to get out and get involved that our residents volunteer throughout the city at different programs, going to the theater, and just staying engaged in their life. And I think it definitely prolongs their life and keeps a more satisfied living arrangement for our residents.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more about healthcare and how a CCRC really works from a healthcare point of view. And we're going to talk about money. How are these things structured? What can you expect for inheritance if you buy in and so on? By the way, one of the things I think is the most important part of all this is that it gives you the time to really take care of the creative spirit that generally comes to us.
You may think that I'm full of it.
No, I'm not. We do get some creative. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da.
Okay, so we're taking a little break while they put the commercials in. So you see how it goes, okay, Kyle?
Yeah.
Very good. So when I come back, I'm going to talk about the healthcare part of this, because there's healthcare models and there's hospitality models on assisted living, CCRCs, and you can just talk about how which way the CLARE is going and how what we can expect from the healthcare part of it. And then we'll go into the structure, the financial structure that we talked about before. Okay?
Sure. Sounds good.
Yeah. I actually have a question for you when we're finished. That has nothing to do with the show. So first of all,
okay, yeah.
We're ready to go. This will be a little bit shorter, and then I'm going to, at the end, I say goodbye to everybody for the week. So, okay? So are you ready for... We just. Okay. Is there anything else other than the Kyle I'm talking to with you now, the financial structure and the healthcare component that you would like to get in the last segment?
No, I think we're right on the right topic. So if there is anything, I can add it.
Right.
So I think we're okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth about Aging. We are the 2015 winner of the Gold Award, highest you can get, from the Mature Media Institute, and we are just so thrilled because we do try to bring you aspects of aging that you might not have thought of, but you will, and this way you get empowered and connected and informed. And we have funny shows. I mean, we spoke today about men's grooming and how to make your hair grow. Now we're talking about one of the most essential parts of growing older, where you live. We're speaking with Kyle Exline. He is the executive director of The CLARE. And you can go to theclare.com, take a look at what they have. Now, it's in the great state of Illinois. We have many, many stations in Illinois in which we are heard. And it's in Chicago. Happen to love Chicago. People always ask me, have you seen the Book of Mormon? Of course, I live in New York. I say, yes. They said, how'd you get tickets? I said, I went to Chicago. I saw it in Chicago. It was wonderful. So yeah, I'm a big fan. And the fact is that I don't even know if you know, Kyle, that the American Society on Aging, their big conference every year is always in Chicago in March. Do you attend that?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yes, yeah, I do every year, so it's a great conference.
I'm always there, and I will meet you there this year because I'm always speaking there or attending. But let's go back to the issue of healthcare. When people are aging in place, meaning they're in their own home, they usually begin to think about a congregate facility or even a CCRC, which has continuing care, meaning you could start living independently and even end up in a nursing home, but all within the same structure. They only start to think about it, usually, when they have a healthcare need. When there's some activity of daily living they can no longer do easily. And therefore, when they look at the CLARE, they must be looking at the healthcare concepts. And there's the hospitality model, which you really just described. The dining is great, the life purpose is great, the activities are great. But then there's the healthcare model. So how do you blend those two, and what healthcare is available?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. The independent living, and then we also have assisted living and skilled nursing. So those are almost like, to a certain extent, separate businesses because they are so different as far as different regulations that we have and the different services that we offer. We try to carry over that same hospitality mindset that we have for the entire Clare, definitely carry that over to the assisted living and skilled nursing. The concept is as residents age, they then need those additional services. What we're finding in the skilled nursing and assisted living is very similar to what we're finding everywhere. People want high quality. They want focused services. They want great activities. They want to be able to, even when they need, they're in skilled nursing for rehab or they're on hospice, they still want to be able to control their life and be able to make decisions day to day that on what they want to do and how they can get involved. So we try to carry a lot of the same principles over to those areas.
So let's talk about logistics. Let's just say rehab. So in other words, they're not going to be there forever. It's not an Alzheimer's or long-term care issue. It's a rehab issue. Will they move over to another facility and then go back to their independent apartments, or how would that work?
So, yeah, say we have a resident that's a resident of the Clare in the independent living. They fall, they break a hip, they go to Northwestern Hospital, have a procedure, then they come directly back to the Clare for rehab. So Medicare would cover that stay, and so they stay with us. So we have a full therapy team that works with them as an inpatient therapy resident until they're able to go back home. Once they go back home, there may be some home health services that we offer, but they go directly back to their independent living apartment.
Okay, so remember, it's not, there's always in some kind of facilities we worry about when we lose our bed, but here that cannot happen. It's really your place. Now, before we get into the financial structure, let me give you another example of that and ask a question. You have a lot of couples, and one of the big things in my life as an elder law attorney in my past life was that couples age differently, and some of them need assisted living, and some of them can live independently. And they move them. They separate them in assisted living. And these could be people who are married for 60 years, not even 50, but 60. At the Clare, what would happen if people had different health care needs?
And we see it all the time, and that's really where we think the Clare adds a lot of value, or any CCRC adds a lot of value. So if you're the couple's living in independent living, and now the spouse develops Alzheimer's and really needs memory care support, well, we have a floor that's dedicated for memory care support. And so the way it would work here is that the one resident who is still healthy and independent would maintain their independent living apartment. The other resident would just go down a few floors into our memory care floor, where they would be able to get the services and the care that they need. Some situations we have residents that prefer to bring care into their home so they can both live in that same independent living apartment together. But we find that most residents, it's better for both couples if they're, especially in a memory care situation, if they have that ability to get the services they need directly from the nurses and the CNAs on that individual floor, and then all it takes is an elevator ride down to be able to see them each day.
Right. And, of course, as you said, because you have home health care as well, for people who just have an activity of daily living that they can't do, they can stay in the apartments together, and one could get some at-home care and the other does not need it. Now, before we leave, we got to talk about, this is a particular kind of structure with a monthly fee and a buy-in. Now, that buy-in depends on the size and value of the apartment that they're going to be living in. But in the moment we have, a lot of people will say, well, if I buy in and I don't own it, what about my heirs? And so let's just take a second, Kyle, to explain what happens to the money that people spend to buy into the Clare in the first place if anything happens to them.
Yep, so exactly. There's an entry fee payment and then a monthly service fee. That entry fee, there's a few different types of contracts, so I would encourage people to explore those different types of contracts. But typically you see one that offers a refund on that entry fee once they move out of the Clare, pass away, or maybe they move to a different city. Once that happens, the refund, in this case at the Clare, we have a 90% refundability on our contract. So 90% of that initial buy-in would be paid back to the heirs or to the trust or estate or however you have it set up.
Right.
So there is a payment back.
I think that's important to people to know, And all of this is important. So I have to thank you. I cannot believe it. We're at the end of our hour here today. Kyle Exline, Executive Director of The Claire. If you want to look at it as a model, it is a growing model, but this is one of the best. Take a look at theclaire.com. At least you'll have a standard against which you can judge other facilities in other parts of the country. Thank you so much, Kyle.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. And by the way, for all of you, this is the place to go. So if there are topics you're interested in, it is GenerationBoldRadio.com. Otherwise, get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay, very good. So we really got a lot in, don't you think?
Yeah, we did. That was good.
That was very good. So a couple of things. First of all, you'll get a report as to when this is going to air. And this Sunday, Eastern time at 10 a.m. But I think that the Illinois, we have two or three Illinois stations. They also repeat it, I think, on Saturday nights or whatever. You'll know that, and anything that you want to use it for your own social media or however, it's up to you. We love it because we want people to know that we're there. And it is archived, so you can always hear it. Also, if you have anything about CCRCs that's a nice article, we have a blog. Is there anybody who might be able to send an article?
Yeah, let me get with Vanessa and the group. We definitely have that information. So.
Okay, who is Stuart? Who's going to be sent the information? The Vanessa or it's not you that whose name he has to send it, but he does have
David or Vanessa probably.
It would be David or Vanessa, he's saying. Oh, he's going to give you the name. I have a question for you. If you have 1 minute.
Sure.
We have a company, and that company is on is in Santa Monica, California, and here in New Jersey, as consultants to mostly Catherine. Well, the name he has is Catherine.
Catherine
Pastiak. Does that mean anything to you?
That does not mean anything to me.
No. All right. Well, she may be your PR person.
She may be. Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, you guys will get all this. Our company is a consultant to mostly spas and hotels, and also to assisted, not so much assisted livings, but over 55 communities, totally independent living communities, here and also in Mexico. But our heart, I guess we would say, is with active aging and having people go into congregate living before it's too late, before they're only looking at it really as a substitute for 24/7 care. And we would like to be able to reach companies like yours, like The Claire, with our services. Now, mostly we go to conferences for hotels and spas. And what we're doing for them is we're lensing it for the mature client in hotels and spas. Healthy environments, safe environments, and services that the boomer and senior are looking for. And the same thing with our over 55 communities. We're generally working with the architects from scratch. What is the best universal design? What kind of activities should be in the clubhouse? Price points, marketing. But for the assisted livings and the CCRCs, we haven't touched that market. We go to a lot of conferences, but not conferences where you guys go, other than ASA, let's say, and Leading Age, and Leading Age. I don't know what else we should be going to. I'm asking you, if you were looking for consultants, where would you look to find them?
So I guess I'm not clear on exactly what the consultant would be doing at the community. So maybe give a little bit more information about the services you would consult on.
Right. Well, there's three things. One is activities. What is the activities and what might the activity director access? Now, some places that are starting from scratch don't even have an activity director, so we have an HR component. For spas and hotels, we can have one also for the activity directors. But even if they do have them, what are the activities that should best be implemented in that environment. So that's one thing for successful aging. The other is the architectural elements, universal design. We have resources all over the world now because of our spas and hotels. So we have a lot of resources for the right kind of materials to use, whether it's green or healthy. Even fabrics, even incontinency fabrics, you have no idea. We also do a lot on sensing, like, are your signs big enough? Will people really be able to see the menu? We work with restaurants, too. Anything that has to do with the older adult, the boomer and the older adult guest. So lighting. These are all things we generally work with either the architects or designers or renovators. So that's another whole aspect of what we do. So the activities and the environment and the theme or concept also of the way the whole place should look and what its brand is. And then last but not least, one of our major partners was with Deloitte in the field of hospitality and spas, and he looks at ROI and really gives the feasibility or the bottom line of what doing a particular kind of change, if it's a renovation, or adding a feature, if it's a new build, what you can expect back in terms of, you know, heads and beds, which is what they call it in the hospitality industry, what you can expect with regard to that. So there's a financial feature to it, there's an architectural and an activity feature.
Okay.
And sometimes it's just a report. It could be as simple as a report. It could be as extreme as we work day-to-day with an architect if it's a new build.
So a couple thoughts on just how to, you know, where we're at and how to get exposed to this industry. First, Leading Age is definitely your best one. So you're going to get almost every provider goes to Leading Age. I was just there in Boston a few months ago, I guess. But then there's also local associations that Leading Age has. So each Leading Age has a state association. Those sometimes are more personal, so you're able to, you know, Leading Age is so big, there's no way you're going to be seen by everyone. The state associations is usually a finer group of people that have better relationships built. The other thing I would look at is, for example, the Claire, we're managed, and I work for a company called Life Care Services. So Life Care Services provides all the management support, all the financial support, all the marketing support for a retirement community. We also have a development company that has architects that are specialized in senior living buildings. So a lot of the services could be provided by a management company, but we also have a group purchasing organization. And so typically services that you're offering, consultants would work with our GPO, and then the GPO would spit out, listen, if you need consultants for X, Y, and Z services, this is a recommended vendor. They've been, you know, they've been successful here. That is a great way to get in front, you know, even more in deep of the executive directors and administrators for us to find your information. So,
right. And the group purchasing services, there are several of those.
There are. So the one we use is actually our company owns. So it's Care Purchasing Services. It's one we developed, and we've built this partnership of companies. But a lot of faith-based retirement communities, and I can't remember the name. It's Good Samaritan. There's a specific GPO that's very, very large that specifically focuses on those faith-based communities.
Right.
That most of them use. So there are several out there.
That last one, do you have the name of the faith-based one? Because we're going to go and get our brochures out there and you know, support them and hopefully get our name out there.
Let me just do a quick Google search and see if the name pops up.
That I can do. Don't worry about that. Okay, if you had it offhand, it would be great. But I really appreciate this. It definitely points me in the right direction. Okay?
Okay. Thanks,
Thank
Adrian.
You so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello, Lauren?
Hi, Adrian.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, fine, thank you.
Yes, I'm going to introduce you to the show in a second, but my producer just has a message for me, so hold on.
Okay.
Hello. Sorry. We're
Hi.
Good.
Hi. Would you like me to pronounce?
So what we're going to do is we have a whole half hour together, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The show airs Saturday morning between, I guess, 7 and 7:30. Sometimes they repeat it. And it's local. The people in Warren, Hunterdon, and Union County hear it
okay.
on WTCC,
okay.
WTCP radio.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you know, it's also streamed, so you can really hear it anywhere. And what we do with this little half-hour show is we do things that are local and fun and that sort of thing. So I wanted to highlight you as a local author.
Oh, thank you.
And then talk to you about the inspiration for the books. I see you have a horse series. We can talk about, it's pretty obvious to me what inspired you, but you'll tell everybody else, okay? And just what it's like to write these books for the kids and whether they have a message or they're pure entertainment, that sort of thing.
Okay. I write for adults, too. I don't know if
right.
you've noticed that, but I've started with adults first, and I have started with children afterwards. But that's, we can talk about whatever you like. But would you like me to pronounce my last name for you?
I will. We didn't get to, okay, so I have Spiata de Mar, or is it de Mare? You tell me.
You got the Spiata de Mare.
Right. De Mare, okay, very
de Mare.
Good. Lauren Spiata de Mare.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
that's it.
Okay.
Of course, you can get the books on Amazon and in bookstores. Any other thing that you want to...
Or they can contact me directly.
I
have a website. That might be the easiest. Lauren's. And I'll spell it for you, Lorens, readingroom.com.
Okay.
So they can go on my website, and if they have any questions, they can email me directly.
Very good. Okay, and one of the things I will ask you, because when did you first start writing?
When I was 19, and I just turned 59.
Okay, so I will, very good. So I will be asking if you've seen changes in trends. Of what children are reading. And the other is, with the adult books, I don't have that. I have pictures and of your kids' books and
okay.
their titles.
Do you have the brochure in front of you?
The only thing I have is I have all the children's books, and I have the new series that's coming out. And no, these are all kids.
Oh, if you look, my author visit brochure. Now, this is something I emailed to you. The back panel, I have a coffee table book about ex-race horses. I have a reference book on Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. I've written several other reference books. So if you wanted to ask me, you could just say something general, like let's talk about your adult titles, and I could just
right.
say a few things, if you like.
Very good.
Okay, and the other thing about the trends, I'm very animal-oriented, so I don't read a lot of other, you know, children's books that are out there. What I know is that a lot of times the picture books have gotten a lot shorter, but I don't think you can really tell a story that well that way, so I always keep mine at about 1,000 words,
mm-hmm.
which is how I was trained decades ago.
Yeah, yeah. So we can talk about attention span.
Okay.
All right. So
all right.
I'm ready to go. When Stuart gives me in the middle of it, I do stop you. You'll hear me do that verbally. To do an invitation to the library, which we are going to be having a seminar this Saturday. So we're going to be hearing this maybe 2 hours before our actual seminar. But I will break in on our conversation. You'll hear me do this, and then I'll go right back to you.
Okay, so I'll just be quiet. Okay.
Yeah, you will. Stuart, are we doing music? Are we going? No, so we're going to go in cold. Good. All right, I'm ready.
All right.
Before I go, I want to be sure. Lauren Spiata de Mar.
De Mare. Mare, like mare, like a horse.
Right,
de Mare.
Okay. Yeah. So. I knew it was wrong, that's why I had to say it again.
That's
go
all right.
Ahead. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is the Travel and Leisure Arm of Wednesday's Ronald Gelock Retirement Power Hour. As we say, every Wednesday we show you how to make money, and every Saturday we show you how to spend it. We have a good time this half hour, always talking to somebody local or could be international, but something that you can do, whether it's travel or leisure or fun or today reading to your kids, your grandkids. We are always introducing you to tidbits of the good life that may have eluded you, and that's what I'm here for every single Saturday. And today, I have a wonderful opportunity to introduce you to a local writer, local author, Lauren Spiata DeMare. And she is an author of books, many, many books for kids, but also books for adults, all of which have the theme of animals, animals that you may be very familiar with, animals that you might not be so familiar with. And I want to be talking to her today about how she gets her inspiration, maybe hints and tips for you guys who've come to the point in your life that you would like to write, and, of course, great hints and tips for the holiday season if you're buying books for kids or for adults that love animals. So I'm very happy to say hello, Lauren. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Adrienne. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, during our little chat together, you said, oh, I started writing when I was 19 years old. So this has been something in your life, almost all of your life. How do you get the inspiration to write, and why did you select animals as your focus?
Well, I said I started writing myself when I was 19, but I've had the interest since I was a child. I grew up in the 1950s, and when everybody else was reading Nancy Drew novels, I was reading dog and horse stories. I love them. Some of my favorite authors were Walter Farley, Margaret Henry, Albert Payson Terhune. So I was always reading dog and horse stories. So by the time I got to be about 19 is when I started actually writing professionally and getting published.
And, you know, we always think about authors as who knows where they are. But you are really the author next door. You live in Tewksbury. There is plenty of horses, animals. It's like living in a petting zoo around here. So there's a lot of inspiration just around you. But tell everybody, what about your own? Do you have your own animals?
Yes. I've always had animals since a child. I have small birds. I have two bunnies. I have some dogs. I have a wonderful quarter horse who actually lives in Pittstown. As a child, I had many animals, too. And I also started taking horseback riding lessons when I was a kid. So I always say my personal life and my professional life is very interconnected.
Well, now everybody wants to do that, but not everybody can. Did it occur to you one day that, gee, I love this topic, I'm just going to be a writer about that? Or how did that come over you?
Well, I do recall, again, when I was a child, I did like to read a lot about animals. I also liked homework assignments where I was given opportunities to write. But early on, I thought my dream was to be a dog trainer for television. And I talked about that to anybody that would listen at the time. But as I got a little bit older and I started training my own dogs, I realized I love them. I love the dogs. I love to train them, but I'm really not that good at it. However, I do write well, and when I write, I can interview dog trainers, animal behaviorists, all types of people, professionals in the animal world, and kind of live vicariously through them and then write about them and then share what they know with the world, so to speak, whether I'm writing for adults or kids.
Well, you know, it's exciting to think that somebody can do it, hear from somebody who can do it. And I'm going to take a little bit of a break. Now we come back, I want to talk about a series that you have, a latest series on horses, and a little bit about the content. And then we'll talk a little more about younger children and the books you write for young kids, and something we discussed, which is attention span. Because I know people who say, hey, nobody reads anymore. But we will be back to disprove that in just a moment. For all you folks who are anywhere near the Clinton Library today, which, if you don't know, it's on Halsted Road in Clinton. It's the north branch of the Hunterdon Library. I am going to be there, and I'm going to be doing a 9:30 to 12:30 presentation on the recent changes in Social Security, the recent changes in the pension laws, and the recent changes in taxation of your IRAs and 401ks. Now, these are very recent. These are new laws. Two of them just passed October 30th. The others are pending and on their way. So it's a very important meeting because of any of you who plan to rely on those pillars of retirement, pension, Social Security, and IRAs, you're going to need to know this and be prepared there. Even for the laws that just passed already, there are things you can do between now and April 30th to protect yourself, and it can mean as much as $16,000 a year in your pocket if you know exactly what to do. And that's just on the Social Security changes alone. It can mean many, many thousands if you know how to work out the new changes that are coming in the IRA tax laws. So it is absolutely free. It begins at 9:30. We actually are going to have coffee and donuts and bagels for you. There is a phone number you can call, 800-467-8152, to get your free reservation. But we are so close to the time that I would tell you that we'll just pull up a chair for you if you get there at 9:30. But please do, if you're planning to do it, please come on time, because some of the most important information is right from the beginning. So that's 800-467-8152, and you can register there and get your name on the list. I don't even know at this point. We have a maximum of 50 people. I know the last that we looked, we did have 40, but that was a couple of days ago. So maybe it's a good thing if you did call. Otherwise, be there. I'll make sure. You just say, from the radio show, I'll make sure you get a front row seat. Okay. That is today at 9:30. Once again, Halsted Road, and that is in Clinton. That's the North Branch of Hunterdon County Library. All right, we're speaking with Lauren Spiata Mayer, and she is Lauren Spiata de Mayer, and she is an author of many, many books. All of them are animal focused, one way or another, for adults and kids. But I wanted to focus for a minute on a new series that's coming out about horses that help or horses that work. So, Lauren, A, how'd you get the idea for it? And B, does it train kids not just to see horses in a different way, but maybe to see work and activities and productivity in a different way?
Well, you're talking about my chapter book series, which is the Horses That Help series. It was published by Enslow Publishers. They are a school and library book publisher. And I had noticed by reading their catalog that they had a series on dogs with special jobs, but they had nothing on horses. So I offered to do one on horses, and I was very excited when they accepted my proposal. As I mentioned earlier, I have my own horse, so of course he's a big part of my inspiration. But there are four titles. One is Therapy Horses, there's Police Horses, Draft Horses, and Performing Horses. Performing would be on television, in movies, in parades, all different types of things. So it was, of course, I, as chapter books for a school and library book publisher, I imagined students going to the library, taking out these books, and doing reports on them. They're reference books. But I also wanted to show the relationship that people can have with their horses and doing all different types of jobs. And it really is, you know, horses are wonderful animals, and it's amazing all the different things they can train to do with us and for us.
So,
and by the way,
that
series is already published. It's already out there. It's available in hardcover and softcover.
Let's just dwell on that for a minute. We're going to be talking about many of your other books, and a lot of people are very interested in this because the holiday season is coming up, and your books for kids make great gifts. Your books for adults do as well. How they're in the bookstores, they're on Amazon, but you said that there was one website, which I'm going to give now, laurensreadingroom.com, and that's LORENS, laurensreadingroom.com, where they can even see all the books, ask you questions, and I guess that would be the best way if they're interested in books for the holidays.
Yes, that's my website, so they can see what's available. They can email me if they have any questions. You can order books by sending me checks. You can order using PayPal. But I like to hear from readers. So if they have questions or they're not sure what would be an appropriate book for a grandchild or niece or nephew, they can certainly just email me, and I'd be happy to respond.
And there's a lot to choose from. Let's go to some of the books for smaller kids. You know, you have ones about puppies, Chelsea the new puppy, and you've got all the way up to bears. So how do you, obviously you're not a one animal pony, one trick animal. You got a lot of different animals here. So how do you pick your animal?
Well, a lot of them come from my own experience. For example, Chelsea and the new puppy is a story of sibling rivalry, except they're not children, they're dogs. My husband and I had our first dog. Her name was Chelsea, and she was an only dog, an only child for about 5 years. And then we decided to get a puppy to keep her company, and lo and behold, she was very, very jealous, very unhappy, and took about a year for her to accept the little puppy. And ultimately, they became wonderful friends, and they both lived a very long life, which was great. But I just thought that children who were having, expecting to have a new brother or sister could relate to the emotions of the dog. And that was actually my very first picture book, and it has been very popular over the years. I have another one called Hannah's House Rabbit. That's actually a story based on an apartment bunny I had when we were first married in the 1980s. We were kind of ahead of our time. We had a house rabbit before. Now it's very popular to have house rabbits, but back then it was something kind of unique. And instead of having my husband and I as the main characters, I changed the human characters to a little girl and her single mom, but all the bunny information is true. Now, you mentioned... I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just want to pick up on that. And her single mom. So really you're putting the whole thing, each book, into an environment, a real life type of environment that kids could relate to and maybe get a better understanding of where they are in life as well as where this particular animal that's the metaphor or the avatar almost is in life. And I think that's very valuable, and that's why I particularly want you to discuss Madeline's Miracle, because that is a very, very important book, I think.
Yes, well, I had heard about Milestone Equine Rescue, which is out in Pohatcong, New Jersey. It's an all-breed horse rescue, and I wanted to write a children's book to highlight the work they do. And I thought, gosh, they all the horses have a story. I could have written about any of them. But Madeline was a little pony that was kicked and not given any medical treatment. And she was rescued, and she was kind of hobbling around because it was a very bad injury. And there was some publicity about her. And a little girl decided instead of having gifts sent to her for her birthday, she wanted her friends to send donations to help Madeline so that she could have surgery. Well, of course, the media got wind of that wonderful idea. And then all of a sudden, all these children were doing things to help Madeline. They were having bake sales and doing different things to raise money. And so children really made a difference in that pony's life. They saved thousands of dollars. They, got thousands of dollars so she could have her surgery. So I picked that because to show that children really can have an effect and help an animal. And that book has been also very popular.
You know, there is a terrible incidence, as many incidences of animal cruelty. Do you think that your books instill more kindness in kids because they do see, they do what they see, and when they see things that are cruel very early in life, they may end up doing that unthinkingly. But does this help foster a better relationship?
I hope so. I mean, certainly you have to start at a young age to teach, humane values and so forth. My books always, I try and show the bond you can have with all kinds of animals. And I also try to show how important it is to be responsible and caring for the animals. I always say the enjoyment has to outweigh the work. If you're not enjoying the responsibility of caring for your animals, you really shouldn't have them. You don't need to have them. But if you do, you owe that animal a good life. And I also think, too, children can relate to situations when the animal is the main character. A lot of my books are about animals with disabilities, triumphing over their disabilities. So I think and I hope that teaches children to be more sympathetic.
Well, we're going to take another little break. I just want to plug my next event, which is in an hour or two. And then I want to get back to a book that isn't exactly the same as all your other books, and that is Rockwell. But we'll be back with that in a second. That's a little off beat. Interesting. Just to remind you that this is Adrienne Berg, your host. I am the co-host of the Ronald Gelock Retirement Power Hour, where we talk about your money every Wednesday drive time from 6 to 7 on this station. I will be at the Hunterdon County Library today at 9:30 to 12:30, but it is a complete workshop, so please come at 9:30 if you're planning to do so. It's on Halsted Road in Clinton. Now, you don't have to have any ticket. It's absolutely free, including the coffee and donuts. But I'll give you a number if you would like to RSVP last minute, 800-467-8152, 800-467-8152. So let's go back, Lauren, to Rockwell. It's a little bit different than your other books. Tell everybody about it.
Well, it was actually one of my favorites. It's kind of a special book. It's called Rockwell, A Boy and His Dog, and it was published by Barron's Educational Series. Now, I had written a pet reference book for Barron's on spaniels, so for a number of years I was trying to get them to assign me a children's book. And eventually they said, well, we have this series. There has to be a famous person, a child, and a famous piece of work. And the author was able to select who they wanted. Well, I selected Rockwell because he did a lot of paintings of children and dogs. And I'm primarily a nonfiction writer, so I was hoping to find one of his child models, who obviously now would be an adult, and write a story about his experience with Rockwell. Well, I did get to find one of his favorite models. His name was Scotty. He was actually a neighbor at the time. He's when I wrote the book, he was in his 60s. I found him out in Colorado. But what the disappointing part was that I found out the book revolves around the paintings A Boy and His Dog. They were actually famous calendar paintings of Rockwell featuring a little boy and a beagle. So when I asked Scotty, who was a young man at the time, to tell me about the beagle, he said, I never actually met the beagle. Rockwell always painted the children first and painted the animals in afterwards. And I was so disappointed. No one would think that. But I said, well, do you know anything about that dog? And he goes, I think she was a stray. So I took that kernel of truth and I embellished and created a stray dog storyline. So I actually call that book historical fiction, because the relationship between Rockwell and Little Boy is true.
You know, these are fascinating books, and they're wonderful books. You can read about all of them, and you can get them at Lauren's Reading Room. We're speaking with Lauren, L-O-R-E-N, Spiata de Mer, a local author. But, you know, I said before a little break, who reads anymore? I've heard that more than once, by the way. Or there's no attention span, or it's got to have a video, or is it on YouTube? What do you think? Obviously, people do read, but is there a change? Is there a trend? After all, you've been writing for decades. What do you
think? Well, there are changes, obviously, but someone like myself, I like a real book. I like to be sitting on my bed or sitting in my living room and looking and reading a real book, especially for children. I don't think any other experience compares, especially with picture books. When I was, being taught how to write for, professionally, I was told that children's picture books should be 1,000 words. There are trends. More recently, the books have been a lot less words. But I always stick with 1,000. I think that's a good number. I think you can get the story across. And of course, you have illustrations. And generally, they're about 32 pages. So even though some things have changed, I like to stick with the things the way I've learned them. And I find that there's still quite a bit of interest in traditional books, and I'm happy about that.
You know, one of the things that a lot of our listeners are interested in is their own creativity, their own desires to sit down and write, and the process of writing. And we've talked about that with many, many authors. But what we never talked about is the pictures. Because most of the authors that I have had on are either fiction writers or nonfiction, but it's all words. Tell us about the pictures. How do you pick them? How do they get produced?
Oh,
what's the process
well,
there?
That's always a surprise to people outside of the industry. The author has absolutely nothing to do with the pictures. When you work with a traditional publisher, your responsibility is to write the story. And then the art director selects an artist that they think will do a good job in illustrating your story. Now, of course, if you self-publish, you can hire a photographer, you can hire an illustrator. You get a lot more involvement in the book, but when you're working with a traditional publisher, you're unable to have a say in the art. But I'm glad you brought this topic up, though, because I do teach introduction to book publishing courses. I teach them at adult schools, at Warren County Community College. I teach them at bookstores. So, again, if there's anybody out there that may be interested in an upcoming class, if they go on my site and email me, I will take down their name and let them know when my you know, new classes are coming up.
I find their one.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think it's a great, that's another great gift for the holidays, for people who know that somebody really wants to write and doesn't know how to get started, or they've been talking about it for years and nothing has happened. A course is one of the best things that you can give anybody. But it sounds like, Lauren, that right this minute you don't have one scheduled, or am I wrong about that?
I have definitely one coming up in the spring at Warren County Community College. I'm talking to a couple of local venues about having some, you know, over the winter. They're short classes. They're usually only 3 or 4 weeks, but they're very personalized. Everybody gets homework assignments. I find they're very popular, and it doesn't matter what genre you're interested in. You know, just because I write about animals, it doesn't matter. You could be writing a novel. You could be writing a memoir. The industry works the same way. So, you know, I'm happy to, you know, tell people about the upcoming classes, and I'm sure they'll have a few on the agenda before the spring.
So that's wonderful, and once again, it's Lauren's, L-O-R-E-N-S, Spiata de Mer, that we're speaking with right now. But if you go to Lauren's Reading Room.com, you'll get some great information. So one more insider question. You know, I have written a lot of books. That's why I'll be at the library. I guess I should mention that our two latest books is How Not to Go Broke at 102 and Beating the Fear Factor, False Evidence Affecting Your Retirement, which is why I am at the library today, Lauren, in Huntington Library in Clinton at 9:30 to 12:30, plug, a show up to talk about changes in our laws that are affecting our money. But as an author myself, a lot of people ask me, how do I get a publisher? And I laugh sometimes because I say, you know, I've had the greatest publishers, but I've also self-published. I've done both. And these days, self-publishing might be the better way. But I'm going to ask you that question. You also have great publishers, and yet you do teach how to write, you teach how to self-publish, and how to get a publisher. What's your take on the modern or the current situation for people who are first-time writers? Should they go for that publisher, or should they bite the bullet and self-publish?
I think it kind of depends on your nature. Getting a traditional publisher can take a long time, months to years. Some people don't have the patience for that kind of thing. They want to jump right in and get the project off the ground. Either way, though, regardless of how you get published, you have to have a marketing plan. You have to be interested in self-promotion. Either way, you as the author have to promote your book so people know about it. So I think the marketing is actually almost more important than how the book itself gets produced.
I'm going to throw that to you also. What people don't know, and it's always a surprise, they think that if you have a publisher, you have a book, and you go home and write your next book. No. That book may not get into the bookstores. If it does, nobody may see it. It is now today's responsibility of an author to have their own platform.
Exactly.
And use it. And you can't even get a publisher if you can't tell the publisher what your platform is and how you're going to market your own book. So that's why self-publishing has become closer to getting a publisher, because in both cases, as Lauren says, it's you are the point person for getting that book out there. How do you do it, Lauren?
Well, luckily for me, I'm also a publicist, and I enjoy the publicity aspect of the industry as well. I always start out with press releases. As a matter of fact, I have a new book coming out next week, a children's picture book called Because of Bentley. And if people are enjoying their local papers, the Huntington Review, the Huntington Democrat, Today in Huntington, they'll start seeing press releases about my new book. So that's the first thing I do, is get a press release out there. And I teach the students in my class how to write a press release, so that that's one of the first things they can do. I send books out to be reviewed. I give talks. I teach classes. So it's almost like a constant being out there so people are aware of you. I also, one of the things I love to do is going into schools and doing author visits. That way, I'm right there with my main audience, and I get to meet with a lot of children who get the opportunity to find out how I write the books and to hear me read them or to read them themselves. So there's really quite a lot you can do to promote yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, the old image of the professor who's sitting there with the patches on his coat sleeves, and he's got a pipe, and no, he never goes out. He just has his typewriter, and he's writing, and he writes a book, and the world knows about it. Forget about it, as they say in Brooklyn, where I came from. No. You are out there promoting and working hard to let people know. And if you don't have the passion that Lauren has about getting that story out, writing it alone isn't enough. And it's very heartbreaking for some people to hear this. But I do want them to hear, because then maybe they will dust off their ideas and they will begin to write. Now, I want to go back to we talked a lot about the kids and books and the fact that they're not just about animals. They're about life situations that kids can relate to. But the adult books. Now, the adult books are a little bit different again, because they are about animals as well, but they have a different purpose in the lives of your readers. So tell us a little bit about the adult books.
Okay. Well, I actually started writing adult books before the children's books, and I started writing reference books. I worked with TFH Publications. They're one of the largest animal book publishers in the world. They happen to be in South Jersey. So my first two books were about macaws and Siamese cats. Later I wrote a book about spaniels, all types of spaniels. But more recently, and what's in print now, is a reference book called Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. And that's a very popular toy dog. And it just so happens my new children's book is about a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel that is a therapy dog. But I also wrote another book that I was very fond of. It's called Beyond the Finish Line, Stories of Ex-Racehorses. It's actually a coffee table book, and it's about people who adopt horses off the track, whether they're standard breds, which are trotters, or thoroughbreds, and retrain them for other disciplines. And I was just amazed at the many different things these racehorses can do when their careers are over on the track. I had people doing dressage, people doing trail riding, jumping, pole bending, which is a Western type of discipline. The horses have a lot of talents, and it's just, and all the people in the books are from New Jersey in that particular book. So, and
that is wonderful, because again, the idea that we're local and we want to read local, now we read about local. So that is terrific. You know, the other thing that you're bringing up that people who are listening might be interested in is it's very, very important to have a focus. You have more than a genre. The kids' books might be a genre, but within that, you are the go-to person for books about animals. And you could see that this is the same in the adult world. For me, it's financial. But it's very interesting. I also do travel writing, and you'll get a kick out of this, Lauren. I was in Kuching, China, which is actually Malaysia, which is the gateway to Borneo, let's say. But it's a big city, Kuching. And Kuching means cat and in Chinese. And you've seen these cats. They're elongated statues, usually white with a red collar, and their arm is up. And that is the symbol of Kuching cat city. And they have a museum. The museum is all about cats. It's every cat you've ever thought about in media is in this museum. So I wrote a travel article about it, and I went to get it published the way you mentioned everyone should do. You send it to publishers. And who picks it up? Cat Fancy Magazine, which I had
never
heard of. You knew it.
I was going to say, you should try Cat Fancy.
And I get a notice, and they paid a lot of money, and they get a notice, 600,000 people subscribe to Cat Fancy Magazine. I could have fallen off my chair because I don't write in that genre at all. Wow, did you tap into something? Unbelievable. I think that article of mine was read by more people than any other article I've published anyplace. That is how big that genre is. So the word to the wise is pick something popular that people really want. Don't be obscure unless you're a scholar and you're going for your PhD. And then it's okay. So we thank you so much. I want to give everybody your website again. It's Lorenz, L-O-R-E-N-S, Reading Room. We're speaking with Lorenz Beata de Mer, and she is a local artist whose work has gone a lot more than local. So we thank you all, and get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay.
All right. Are we all set?
We are all set. I think that was very, very good. It really was great. When is your next book signing? When the Bentley comes out? Or?
I probably have some in January, February. Because we're so close to Christmas, I just want to get the books out to people that are ordering them. Then I'm gonna I'll start setting up. I've been talking to people in Chester, and there's a new there's a new owner of the Califon Bookshop.
So I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, her name. By the way, her name is Heather, and she just took over a couple weeks ago. So I've been talking with her about doing a signing, probably January or February.
That's a very popular bookstore for local.
Yeah. Uh huh.
I hope she continues that same idea, because I've seen many authors speaking there.
Yeah, and it's actually where I started teaching my first intro to book publishing class up there on the second floor.
That's wonderful. So,
yeah.
Let me know. Always let me know. You have our email. Let me know when those classes are, because I like to announce those things also. You don't always have to be a guest. I could do some announcing on the show and all that sort of thing.
Oh, that'd be great. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you asking me to be on the show. When we were talking at the party, we were talking about pet therapy and, you know, other things. So I didn't remember you telling me about the radio show, or we were just talking about other things. So it was a nice surprise.
No, this is good. I mean, you know, I'm on national radio, and everything I look at is very national. You know, big issues and that sort of thing, usually on aging. But I'm not tapped in enough to local. So when I find somebody who has a really good story to tell, it's local, this is the best, because this is the show I have that's only in the three counties.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more local it is, the more people will listen. They have an interest in it.
That's true. So, but all righty, well, I will keep you posted on my classes and my signings. And
right.
I'm sure we'll see each other again.
Absolutely, and I have people sometimes ask me about publicists also, because when they have written a book. So I'll keep you in mind for that as well.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I do work as a consultant, too. You know, a lot of times when I teach the classes, once the class is over, the students want to keep working with me. So I'll help them with press releases and that kind of thing.
So you do the press releases. Do you also call for radio and television sponsors?
I haven't. I mean, I guess I should. I'm very print-focused, so that's always what I think about. But
right.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Those are the old days. I used to do book tours all the time.
Oh, okay.
Not so easy anymore.
Well, I do have a student that may be of interest to you. She's a third-grade teacher in Long Valley. She took my class about 3 years ago. She's now working on her fourth self-published book, but the fact that she was a teacher and then she, you know, used her knowledge to create these adorable children's books, you know, I thought that you know, she's like one of my favorite success stories.
That's good. Any time that you have somebody who you think would be a guest or just to be mentioned because it's local, let me know.
Okay. Her name is Becky. I'll send you over some flyers and, you know, email you some information, and, you know, if you want to follow up with her.
Thank you very much, and take care. We'll talk
All
more.
All right, you too. All righty. Bye-bye.